Oh, hello there. Welcome to the podcast once again. You know, it's always an interesting time when Greg says, let's just do the stuff off the top and get it over with. I didn't follow up off the air on Greg because I didn't want to know, because I wanted to get the live effect of what Greg was talking about when he just said off the air, let's do the stuff off the top and get it out of the way. What particular stuff today are you talking about?
Well, it's a combination of John Scott and Jeremy Roenick. I'm not going to belabor the point. We talked about John Scott a lot.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I'll address the Scott thing first, which is that, you know, there's been obviously a lot said and written by a lot of people who otherwise couldn't give a proton-sized shit about the All-Star game that all of a sudden starts caring about its sanctity. Yeah. You'd said something yesterday about why the fans did all this, and I wanted to follow up on that point because I was thinking about it. And I was thinking about the fact that, you know, who's been completely marginalized in the All-Star game process for the better part of 4 or 5 years?
Who's that?
It's the fans. 'Twas a time when the fans would vote in 10 players into the All-Star game. 10. Okay?
Right.
Vote for Rory happened. Right. And then all of a sudden the format changed, and then it became a thing where they've, what, voted in a couple during the fantasy draft years? 1-10.
Right.
It's like a couple maybe. And then they redo the format again, and now it's like you get 4. So, to speak to your point about why people were motivated to do this, I think it comes, part of it at least, is exerting influence when influence has been taken away. And the All-Star game is for the fans. It is. It's the only thing you can honestly say is for the fans. It's an exhibition held for them. That's
all
it's for.
I keep coming back to the same thing. This is a free focus group. This is a free focus test. What do our fans online think of this event?
Yeah.
Where's their heads at on this event? And if they want to vote in someone like John Scott for this event, obviously they don't take it very seriously. And this to them is fun.
Yeah, but that's the point. Like, I can't underscore this enough. You know, outside of all of the – I had somebody saying that I should be fired by Yahoo because I bully John Scott. That's where we are in this discussion.
You bully? How did you bully John Scott?
I guess by pointing out that he's not that good at hockey and building a campaign to get him voted into the All-Star game. So that's bullying. In 2016.
By giving him a shot at splitting $1 million?
Yeah.
Can you bully me, please? Can you push me around a little bit, Wish? Please, can you attack me online?
But listen, it's an event for the fans. The fans decided to vote in John Scott. Now, you could take a step back and say, oh, it's only about 20 people on Reddit, which would be a lie. I mean, as soon as people got a sense that this could happen, then it became a full-on movement. You can't accomplish this with just a few people on an internet message board. You can't. But when you give the fans a vote, guess what you do? You allow them to vote in whoever the hell they want. And they decided they'd like to see John Scott in the All-Star game. So you can bitch and moan about all of it, and you can complain about – like, let's transition here. Jeremy Roenick said the people who voted in John Scott are not hockey fans.
Oh my
God. Would proffer that they are bigger hockey fans than anyone else.
How out of touch do you have to be to say that?
Yeah.
You have to be the hardest of hardcore fan to be in on that scenario.
To know
I want to know John Scott
yeah,
is.
Yeah, exactly. To know who that John Scott exists.
Did he say that?
He did.
Did he really say that?
I listened to the podcast this morning because I knew that he had talked about the John Scott thing. I knew fell on the other side of the debate and was very interested in what he had to
say.
That's like
saying the Vancouver fans that rioted in 2011 weren't hockey fans. Same kind of
I'll go with this. It's like saying the Montreal fans that all voted in their players as starters, even if they weren't worthy to be starters.
That's right.
Well, those aren't hockey fans. What did Roenick use today? Roenick said that they are effing joke artists are the ones that voted in John Scott. Not a real hockey fan, an effing joke artist.
Okay, here's the thing. Okay, we saw, hang on, pause on this thought. I'm serious about this one. This is what we saw when Twitter first kind of started, okay? There were a lot of people in media who really heard it from people on Twitter because all of a sudden this became a voice that they had publicly. where they could share their feelings about whether it's me or anybody else at that time. I was working at Hockey Night or TSN or Sportsnet or NBC Sports or ESPN. All of a sudden, people had a voice, and they didn't like it. They didn't like getting slammed by these people. So what was the reaction? Just to insult and marginalize them, forgetting the one basic truth out of all of this, that even if it weren't for Twitter, these conversations and these things would still be said. And that's something that everyone has had to come to grips with. Some have and some haven't. Now, I haven't got it as bad as other people, and I've seen other people really get caved in on a lot of stuff, and I get that. But I always come back to the same thing, that if you meet people at a certain place in the road, and that's a place of understanding and respect, that they'll cut you a lot of slack. I get cut a ton of slack on Twitter. I don't get it near as bad as a lot of people do. I probably should get it a lot worse on Twitter than I do. And I think the one reason why I don't wish is because I really believe, like, just as a human being, you have to meet people somewhere. And sometimes you have to meet people on their own ground, even if you don't like it or if you don't believe it. Just meet them there and try to see things from their point of view and just understand them a little bit. That's how you, quote unquote, you know, not curry favor, but that's how you act as a human being, really, more than anything else. Don't just stand in your one place and say everything that I, you know, wave my magic wand over is good and everything else is crap. You can't do that. You have to meet people at a certain place.
Yeah, what you're asking for is a level of understanding and a level of context and a level of knowing where someone else lives. And that's part of this whole thing, too. Why do you think this happened? Do you think it's just because some people got together? Like I had somebody ask me this morning for an article, like, how did you get in touch with Reddit? I said, I didn't. I said, we just did. we did our thing. And Dangle did his thing, and Reddit did their thing, and everybody kind of came to the same place. And it's like, don't you have to take a step back and understand why things happen? Like, for example, like, if you're pissed off at the non-hockey fans who voted in the most obscure hockey player into the All-Star game, if you're pissed off about them, shouldn't you be really pissed at the NHL? Because here's what doesn't happen if the NHL handles its voting correctly. John Scott doesn't get in, okay? And I'll tell you why. Here's why he's in. Because all he had to do was click on his name and then click on a button, and then there's your vote. Do you know why joke candidates never got into the Major League Baseball All-Star game? Because they weren't on the ballot. Because you'd have to write them in. And everybody's too lazy to actually put pen to paper and write a name down. So if you want to get pissed off about why this happened, get pissed off at the NHL for providing the choice.
Okay, here's what I keep coming back to. Did I bring up the example of the dinner on the last podcast?
Yes, you did. About if you say,
just give me what you want.
Pick the meal for me? Yeah.
Yeah. Then you can't complain about it. And right, the NHL exactly. said, here, pick my meal. Oh, hang on a second. I don't like it. It's kind of like an imperial power in the world that, you know, gives a lot of lip service to democracy. But when the election goes the way they don't in a certain part of the world that they have a conflict with, then all of a sudden they invade when the democratic vote goes the wrong way.
Right.
I don't know what country I might be talking about, though. I'm just this up.
Just whatever country you want. All right, listen. The thing I wanted to handle before we get too deep into this is Roenick talking about me on Twitter. That's fine. I trashed his first show. He's allowed to say whatever he wants about me. Roenick, this morning, someone says, I don't think that clown Puck Daddy or whatever he calls himself appreciated the podcast. Do I really have to get into the Hootie and the Blowfish thing again? I don't call myself Puck Daddy. Roenick says, LOL, he doesn't appreciate anything I say or do. He has thin skin and whines every time someone disagrees with him. Now, part of that is true, obviously. I'm doing it right now. But the other part of it is completely false, which is that I appreciate Roenick, and I've said on many occasions that the only thing I want in life is for Roenick to be the guy that we want him to be instead of whatever he is now, and doing a podcast where all he does is talk to his friends. Like, that's maybe better. I don't think that clown Puck Daddy or whatever he calls himself appreciated the podcast this week. Wait, is he responding to the same message twice? He is. He actually is.
Don't worry about it.
Roenick says, I don't listen to his podcast, but I love that he listens to mine. He knows mine is better. I'll just leave that.
I can't comment on that. It might be because I haven't heard it yet. And there's a good chance that it might be because I'm on this podcast.
I think his podcast is probably half as good as ours because Jaffe's on it. And then finally, this one.
That's a compliment to Bill, by the way, for those who may interpret it a different way. That's a compliment to Billy.
Yeah. I mean, Billy has to carry a lot of weight there. A lot of dead weight. And then Roenick said, someone asked, didn't you contribute to his latest book, Why Is He So Sour to the Man? The M is capitalized. And he wrote, yes, I did, because we use the same publishing company. Plus, I'm a good guy. Guess that means zero to him. Oh, well. You know, it wasn't zeroed out. The check you got. I'm going to pretend this is charity. Come on, man. Like what you said. You picked up my book and said, oh, my God, Greg Wyshynski. Let me speak into this phone to the person writing down my words for the intro to his book. And I'll do it to support a publishing teammate. Come on. Really? We're going to pretend that's the case. So that's all I need to say about Roenick. Listen to his podcast this morning and hear the blithering rantings of an egomaniac talking about the John Scott thing from a point of ignorance, not understanding anything about why it happened or why fans would ever vote for the guy. And then, of course, like the most classic thing about Roenick these days is the inability to not straddle the fence. We have the best fans in all the world, but these fans aren't really fans. We have the best All-Star game in all the world, but now the All-Star games are relegated to being a joke. I mean, for God's sakes, get off the fence before your balls explode. Just take a stand.
But at the same time, we've heard plenty of writers go out and call it a joke each and every year. Where's the venom there? Now that someone's actually acted and done something about it, now it's an issue. I mean, how many years have we heard, you know, insert reporter X here, say it's a joke, I don't want anything to do with it, this whole thing should be blown up. Not a freaking word. That's a free pass. But then when a collection of, you know, web-savvy, tech-savvy fans actually do something about it, then it becomes an issue. Okay, so publicly slandering it for years every time it pops up, that gets a free pass. That gets turnstiled. Easy, right this way. And no, don't need to see your tickets, just take a seat wherever you want.
And like we
but
said
when
yesterday,
some people online actually go and do something about it, then it's an issue. See, here's, and again, yeah, I want to come ahead. Back to the point that I made on Sunday as well that you kind of riffed on a little bit there. And I can't stress this enough. And this is what, listen, man, this is what focus groups will tell you about whether it's, you know, the NHL or any corporation. Meet people somewhere. Meet your customers somewhere. Understand where they come from and offer them something. Give them something. Create an environment where they can play too. Where it's not just, wow, you have to stare at us because we're the shiny shield with the silver letters NHL. Or I'm, you know, Superstar X and I've come down off the mountain with these 10 commandments and I'm going to tell you what hockey is all about because I played the game. No, man, like meet people somewhere.
Yeah.
There's a road that we're all on. Try to meet a lot of people along the way. Try to talk to them as we're all going to this singularity. Try to meet people somewhere.
The last thing I'll say about it is about John Scott in the All-Star game. Okay, it ain't going to be the last thing. You're probably going to hear about this until the game happens, to be honest.
Like, we got
the last thing.
Listen,
last
dude, Colby Armstrong's coming up top of the hour. I'm sure John Scott's going to come up.
Last thing until we talk to Colby Armstrong. I think there's been a genuine misunderstanding about why some of us wanted to vote him in. And I think people have, like I said before, people have called it bullying. There's a certain amount of perverse joy we'll take in seeing John Scott participate in skills competitions. But do any of us really want to see him embarrassed?
No.
No.
I don't.
I think, yeah, exactly. I think for a lot of us, we want to see it happen. We want to see what happens when it happens. But are any of us not rooting for this guy? To do well?
I want him to score a goal in the game. I want to see his team win. I want to see
him
split the $1 million. I want him to be a success. And I want people to fall in love with him in Nashville as well.
Yeah.
By the way, we requested him for the show, FYI, and the Coyotes turned us down, saying not at this time.
Yeah, so we'll see where that goes.
But poor producer Sam McKee.
We'll see him in
had
Nashville.
To go through with Arizona. In their defense, I would imagine they've had about a bajillion requests for him. So this isn't me trying to go and, you know, play the, you know, pouty media guy who didn't get what he wants. I'm going to stamp my feet publicly. Like, I'm sure they've got tons of requests for this. I mean, obviously, it's such a huge story.
Right.
But just so you know, we have asked for him on the podcast. Just so we don't get the, why don't you get John Scott and talk to him tweets. Well, trust me, we're trying.
Well, and hopefully we get him at some point. But, like, look, bottom line is this. No one wanted to put John Scott on a torture rack here, okay? We all know it's going to kind of look funny when he's skating around. It's going to be funny when he tries out his hand at some of these skills competitions. But at the end of the day, the bar is so low that whatever he does is going to be folk hero time. You can tell me that fans aren't going to roar when that guy takes the ice. You can tell me fans aren't going to roar when the puck is on his stick for one of the breakaway challenges in the skills competition. We talked about yesterday entry points for fans. Entry points for fans into events like this or NHL seasons. We got one now. I know I'm going to be in that press box rooting for this guy to do well. And yeah. you could put whatever you want on what you think the motivations for this stuff were, whether it was chaos, ridiculing the All-Star game vote, whatever. I know when we sat here and talked about this thing, we talked about the utter hilarity of seeing John Scott in a 3-on-3. There was no question that this is a goof vote. But at the end of the day,
it
was never a case of trying to hold this guy up for ridicule and say, this is a guy who shouldn't be in the league. It's putting a guy who people say shouldn't be in the league in this game to hopefully show that he has some skills beyond what we assume he has.
To the people that continue to slander John Scott as well and talk about how he has no shred of respect or decency and doesn't belong in the game and he's an embarrassment and he's a blight, I can't underscore this enough. And we talked about it on the podcast on Sunday/Monday, this Monday podcast, if you will. Would you like a list of the names of the general managers that have hired him, that have brought him on, that have put him in the NHL? Mm-hmm. It goes like this. Chuck Fletcher, Stan Bowman, Glenn Sather, Doug Wilson, Don Maloney. Mm-hmm. I think your anger is misdirected. John Scott is who he is. There are people that are offering him contracts and a position in this game. John Scott just doesn't show up at a training camp and say, I'm on this team. No. That's not how it happens. So to all those people that continue to denigrate John Scott, I dare you to go after those same general managers publicly in your columns on Twitter and denigrate those GMs as you have John Scott. Oh, wait a minute. We don't want to burn a source.
Right.
We'd rather just go after John Scott as well.
Yeah.
But somehow Greg's a bully? Really?
Well, and it goes back to what we always know about that situation, because people hem and haw about goons and violence and
but never go after the GMs. Never go after the GMs.
Right, exactly. The players that should or shouldn't be in this league. And then when it comes down to, well, why don't we find the coaches and GMs?
Well, I don't know.
Oh,
because you know,
there's sources and drinking buddies and pals and up.
Why don't we take away
a
roster
and
spot? Why don't we take away cap space if Rafi Torres gets suspended for 105 games?
Well, you know, I don't know.
Right. Because you can never take it the one step further. So, again, the fans will get criticized for this as it being a joke and a parody and whatever. And, you know, the NHL won't get anything for it because they're voting allowed it to happen.
They're voting allowed it to happen, and their general manager's allowed for him to be in the league.
Yeah.
But, yeah, blame a podcast and Reddit.
It's the podcast that did it.
And the non-hockey fan, and the non-hockey fans out there that somehow, like, if I'm, like, I'm not a big fan of, like, pick a sport, Wish, because you know me, I'm basically a hockey guy. Pick any other sport. Okay, let's say, baseball.
The National Football League.
I know, like, sweet tweet about football. Actually, tweets are the only thing that I know about football because it shows up in my timeline, so I kind of know something casually. I understand things aren't so good in Cleveland right now. But that's just because I have Twitter. Okay? Mm-hmm. If you told me there was a joke candidate for the Pro Bowl that everybody was voting for, you know what I would say? Good,
yeah.
But I'm not interested. You know why? Because I'm not a football fan.
Right.
I'm not going to go out of my way to vote this guy in to be part of a joke in a sport that I want nothing to do with. So this idea that it wasn't hockey fans voting John Scott in, to me, is folly. It is a complete joke.
Yeah, and just, I'll go one step further.
It's the reason why the NHL hasn't pushed back on it.
Yeah,
it sounds
course.
Good. That's it. Oh, these aren't real hockey fans. Those weren't hockey fans burning cars in Vancouver. Yes, they were.
Yeah. It's tough guy posturing from a guy who's so disconnected with what hockey is in 2016. It's laughable. I would also say that it's one of the reasons why the NHL hasn't pushed back on it. They knew they could delete the votes put him fifth. Say, oh, there was a surge for Johnny Gaudreau at the end or something. Like, they could say whatever the hell they want. There's no way to prove it. But they knew if they did that, then they would upset literally the only people who watch the All-Star game on an annual basis. That's who voted for this, is the people who actually watch this shit on an annual basis. And they know if they piss off those locals, what do you got left? You got no one. So that's why they didn't push back on it. And to further my point from before, when you create an environment where the voting for the All-Star game and that part of the fan experience is so marginalized as it has been since Vote for Rory, and the people that do remember Vote for Rory are still sort of disenfranchised from being involved because they know they'll just steal the votes, then what do you expect is going to happen? You created a vacuum for this event where one group of activist voters could hijack the proceedings. So yeah, I blame the NHL for it, for allowing it to happen, for creating the environment in which it could happen. And then I blame me and you for, you know, lighting the fuse.
No. You called Reddit. I thought you, can you flip me Reddit's number, by the way? Can you text me Reddit's number? Cause I had it, like, and then I did an iPhone switch over. And
it was a great interview. It's going to be on, I think Vice Sports is doing it, but like it was like, when did you reach out to Reddit? And I just like, I flashed to like me and you in like dark robes in a candlelit cave and like Dangles there with Adam Wilde and like Reddit's there in their robes.
We had this order of the solemn members of the John Scott conspiracy together.
We had a Ouija board, and once we were done with Houdini, then we got around to Reddit and worked some of our black magic.
What say you, Bar Down?
Well, we'll just sit over here until you guys figure out what to do, and then we'll just do it too.
Ah, excellent.
Oh,
what say you,
wow.
SB Nation?
Man. Oh, my goodness. Wow.
I'm just going to stand back. I'm not trying to catch a falling knife. Go for it. Hey, by the way, did your dog Squeaky Toy make an appearance on the podcast a second ago?
Sneakers had to go take a wicked piss. I don't know what's happening.
Because Braden Alexander tweets in, shout out to Sneakers Squeaky Toy making a podcast appearance. Did that happen?
Yeah, it definitely. Well, she was ringing. I don't know how you find out that your dogs have to use the bathroom, but we got bells on the door.
Oh yeah,
and so she learned how to nudge the bells in the door with her nose when she has to go out. It's my fault for not taking her out before the podcast, but
sloppy.
Hopefully she can hang in there. Yeah.
Nah, Deacon just barks at, like, Deke just barks at the door. That's it. She gives me one loud bark and stares at me. Just dog faces me. I'm like, all right, bud, let's go.
She's greatly.
Way to go, Deke.
She's not made a mess in the house in quite a long time. We were reminded of that because we just got rid of our bathroom rug. Which used to be her bathroom rug, and it was just caked. Colby Armstrong coming up. More things that don't involve John Scott or Jeremy Rona coming up as well. Sammy, with that, let's start the show proper, shall we?
We weren't supposed to talk about
Merrick,
John Scott.
What's up, dude? When last we saw each other, we were drinking lots of beers.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
I left at a decent. I left a little bit after 10.
No.
I think it was. You were still
the party continued, friend.
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
I don't like to pull back the curtain and reveal the joys of the hockey writer life sometimes, but I'll be honest with you. Between my visit to Stouffville and the podcast and the Jays game last night, I have been on a 3-day bender.
Debate hockey.
I was really surprised when I saw those quotes leaking out on Twitter during the post game. I was literally legit stunned. I thought somebody called them on his cell phone or something. I didn't think there was a chance in hell the Flyers put in front of a microphone last night.
Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Do 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 do.
In the other part of the.
Hang on, who did that?
I'm gonna guess Mark Cole, right?
Mark Cole.
We always do. That's our default. Is that Mark Cole, Sammy?
Yep, Mark Cole. Mark Cole. Right,
Mark
Cole. Sorry.
Cole. There we go. Oh, very good. All right.
The other part of
if you heard that.
The other part of the sneakers thing is that once she, I guess, to bide her time until I could take her out or Ruby can take her out, she decided to grab a felt tip pen and run away with it before. So during the intro, I ran out to grab the last remnants of this pen. That she's devoured. She's into eating pens now, which is really great because that's safe.
That's great for that's A, safe, and B, great for your upholstery. Things can only end well.
Jerome McGinley last night, goal number 600, scored in spectacular.
Yeah.
Oh wait, check that. No, horrible fashion.
Whatever, doesn't matter.
But I mean. But it was. I was thinking. Of, yeah, it was exactly. It doesn't matter. And I was thinking about that.
Doesn't matter.
After he scored it, like what percentage of those goals might have looked like that? Like it's not the ideal situation. I know he's really happy to get the goal.
Our producer Sam McKee and I were talking before the podcast, and he says that goal number 500 was pretty much identical in as far as style and ugliness.
Oh, really?
That's what Sammy tells me. I don't remember 500. Like, who really remembers? Like, honestly. Like, when you go back and you look at, you know, the 500th goal, the 400th goal, the 600th goal, all you know is that they got them.
Yeah.
Who really says, yeah, but you know what? It was deflected off a shin pad and hit a couple skates. And no, they say, oh, you got 600. Oh, that's great.
And you know what's awesome is that, you know, Iggy's always been a really good talker and not exactly the most controversial guy, but always a really good talker. And I appreciated his comments last night in which he said, you know, I'm glad I got it because when you're trying to hit a milestone, you end up getting guys always looking for you. And it gets kind of to be a situation, and he inferred this, that sometimes guys make bad plays because they're trying to force the puck to you so you can get your damn goal. And I think he's such a team guy that he genuinely felt like it's a detriment at this point that they keep looking
for me.
Goal. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's like the guy that has two goals, the net's pulled, it's a one goal game and coach throws him on the ice for the hat trick so everybody tries to feed him.
Right. Right, exactly. Except it's happening in 5-on-5.
They used to do that with bonuses. I remember a famous one in Toronto where I think Lanny McDonald had a pretty sizable bonus. I think it was for 40 goals, 30 goals. I can't remember what it was. And it was a 2-on-0 with an empty net. Sittler had the puck, and he waited till McDonald cut up and gave him the puck. And he scored and cost Harold Ballard, I don't know, what was it, like $50,000 extra for the bonus. But guys would, like, in those heavy bonus days, too, guys would look for each other to get it. Like, towards the end of the year, they would all sort of go, okay, where's your bonus at? 35 goals, you're 2 goals away. Ah, we got to get him his 2 goals. Like, that really was, I don't know if it is so much of a thing anymore, but it used to be a real thing in the NHL when you're playing, like, a lot of empty calorie games down the stretch where it doesn't really matter. Your playoff spot's secure, your spot's secure. Everyone just starts playing for each other. Man, when I found this out, like, you go back to when you're a kid and you think of the games that you were so emotionally involved in and committed to and attached to, and then you realize, yeah, you know what? A lot of the plays that we saw were just guys trying to get each other their bonuses. This is so much about the game. Just guys trying to help each other get a couple of bucks at the end of the year. Let's ask Colby that. Colby Armstrong joins us from Sportsnet and the Penguins broadcasts, former NHLer as well. Colby, we were just talking.
What's up, boys?
A second. Well, good to have you aboard, my man. And we're just talking a couple of seconds ago about guys helping each other get their bonuses. Now, this used to be really a thing. I remember it was specifically in the 70s and 80s when every contract was, you know, so heavily bonus laden. Like towards the end of the year when all the playoff positions were set and you're playing some dead games at the end, guys would just look for each other to make sure they got their cookies so they could hit their bonuses. How much of a thing was that in the NHL when you play? Like, would you sit around and say, oh man, I'm stalled at 33 and I got 50,000 if I get 35?
Yeah, some guys would know about it for sure. It's great. I remember actually, like, a thing when we didn't know about it. We were in Pittsburgh and we were playing in Toronto. It was the last game of the year. I think it was my first year. And Fleury needed, like, a save percentage bonus or something crazy. And they were, like, kind of sitting him out here and there. And he was going to get, like, $1 million or something crazy. It was, like, in his contract. Yeah. I don't know. And, like, Caron was in net and he was stinking up the joint. And they had to put him in and he made, like, a few saves. Enough to boost him up to get his thing, and no one even knew about it. And this is like money-stricken Pittsburgh Penguins at the time, where it was like, oh my goodness, and no one even knew about it. We were on the bus after we found out. We're like, yeah,
way to go, Flower! Yeah,
way to go, Flower! Get your cash. Way to go.
Because that used to, I guess it's not really discussed much, or maybe it's so much of it's just public information now. But man, when contracts were heavy with bonuses, I swear, like I was telling the example of the Sittler McDonald.
Like any given
goal.
Sunday,
right? Where you just wait and you dine out on bonuses towards the end of the year. It's like, all right, guys, who needs what? And then, but that was, those were nasty days too, where general coaches would, you know, get instructions from the owner to bench guys when they were too close to their bonuses. Like five games to get two goals. It's the end of the season. And all of a sudden you're getting health bombed. You're like, what? Yeah. This is just so I don't make my bonuses.
Yeah. You're off the PP now because you need one more goal. I know. Like,
right?
Yeah. I've seen some things happen. I don't know. I've seen guys sniffing for bonuses. Yeah. It's happened.
For sure. Yeah, that was, cool. That was cool about last night. Like Patrick Waugh keeping Iggy on the power play despite the first unit not clicking, keeps him out there to try to get 600 with the game pretty well in hand at that point in the third period. So, Colby, what's your take on Iginla? It's an interesting perspective to be an American and think of Iginla and think about how amazing he is as a player. But where his star status is as far as the generation in which he played. And I can't figure that out if that's a Calgary thing or if that's a not winning a cup thing.
Yeah, he's a legend in Calgary. He played so many, he did so many good things there. I can just speak for what he is as a guy I grew up watching and what he did in Western Canada where I was from, being with the Flames and watching him and, you know, what he meant to that team and what he kind of meant to that fan base in Western Canada, being Flames fans. I wasn't a Flames fan, but I loved and respected Iggy, to getting to the point where I got to actually play against the guy and seeing the competitor he is, how good he is, and now he's getting up there in age and what he's still being able to do. I don't know what you're looking for, really, for me to say about him, but his career speaks for itself.
Let me ask you this, because consistently he dines out on this one play where he's always dined out. How hard is it, accurately, to fire one-timers from the half wall, which is what he's done his entire career?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. The shot that he possesses, I remember for a stretch of time there, like I remember growing up my dad being like, look at Wendell Clark, look at the way he shoots the puck, see the way he gets it back, see that wrist shot, best wrist shot in the NHL. And I grew up with that. And then as I got older, my dad started calling, you see the way Jerome Iginla shoots the puck? He's that guy. He's that guy with that shot that like everybody looked at. And I, you know, for what he did, that little low blocker shot and the quick release, but, and the way he played too, he was like, you know, how many guys are like him in the league that can, you know, put up the goals he put up and then shed the myths and chuck them with guys and like that intensity and that physicality. It's like, I don't know, when he's done, there's none of that really left. I guess Jamie Benn, you can name a few, but he's an all-time player, man.
Yeah, and 600 now. So he's right behind Curry, Cicerelli, and now he's, I think, 10 behind Bobby Hull on that list.
Yeah.
Just remarkable. Yeah, that's a hell of a...
It's crazy.
That's a hell of a thing. Yeah, it really is.
Check out again.
He's a hell of a player.
You see the way he brings it back. You see his release. You see the way his weight transfer? I got that a lot of years from my dad.
Is that right, eh?
I remember... I couldn't shoot the puck anywhere near that, so of course I heard a ton about it. Why aren't you working on your shot? You got to work on your shot, Mark.
Hey, who taught you to work on your hitting? And I'm sure this goes even before your days in Red Deer. Was your dad?
Oh, yeah. He always had me... always telling me how to do it right. And if I screwed it up in a game, always telling me. And if I got blasted by a guy telling me it was my fault, should have protected myself better. And I think that's kind of a lost art too nowadays, is guys protecting themselves.
There's two things. One, in a lot of ways, hitting is sort of or body checking is sort of a dying art as well. And the other one is guys protecting themselves. But you did you had this one unique sort of curl move that you would do when you would hit guys.
I'll just explain. I was always like pretty solid. Like I think I would go in and like surprise guys because I was kind of skinny, but I was pretty solid on my skates, I guess, and I knew like the timing of a hit. So like when you hit a guy, you wait for contact and then drive up from your knees. And I always just kind of had that. So I kind of had a little bit, I felt, of an advantage right from that, just because of my technique, I guess. But as I got older, I just kind of figured out little ways to, like, I guess, get guys. I could say that. Like, I guess I figured out a way to get guys. Like, I would have little ideas in my head, and I'd think about it. Like, guys would think of plays, you know? And like just coming around, guys coming around the net. I saw Dennis Bondy try it he was playing against us in the minors. He wasn't on my team at the time. Believe it or not, Dennis Bondy, and he caught a guy coming around the net, and he came down and caught him at the corner of the net. And I was like, holy man, that's a great idea. I mean, if Bondy could just skate it a little better to get there quicker, he could have had him. So it kind of stole that from the great Dennis Bondy, and I gave it a shot a couple of times, and I ended up lighting some guys up, like absolutely destroying them. And I was like, whoa, hey, this is going okay. And then I evolved into a few other hits where I was like, guys would be cycling the puck, and I would like think, you know what, like if they're cycling the puck, like they always like cycle the puck and they're never paying attention like the other way, I could drift down from my point and just blast a guy. And so yep. I would, you know, watch them cycling the puck and they'd get a good cycle going, gain some speed, and then, you know, just lazily go to dump it back off the boards and turn her, and then I'd be right there like kaboom. So I don't know. Maybe it's cheap, maybe it's not. I don't know. I just found a way to get, as a smaller guy, I could kind of surprise some guys and blast them.
It's good to know that Bonvi wasn't just a complete maniac, that it was all technique.
As far as I would say his technique was great, but I would say his idea was pretty good. I don't know. I saw him do it. I was like, oh, God, that's a good idea.
That's good thinking. Bonvi,
that's when you get in trouble.
You're known for a few of the body checks that you laid out when you played. And as I mentioned before, it really is a lost art in the NHL. But to a lot of people, I mean, your Picasso was the Marian Hossa hit that a lot of people don't talk about, Colby.
Yeah, everyone talks about Koivu in Montreal, I think because it was the Canadiens and he was their captain. It was kind of a heated game, and I remember Lapierre was going after Sid a little bit, and I was getting kind of fired up, and it just kind of presented itself where I was like, okay, I'll crush Koivu, and it just happened, like, perfectly. And anyways, but later on, I got traded to Atlanta, and I played against Hossa, who was in Chicago, and it was right before the Olympic break, and maybe just because I was in Atlanta at the time, but that's my favorite. Like, that hit still hurts me to this day. Like, my shoulder and my neck are still sore to this day because he's so solid, but I absolutely, like, clean hit, like, perfect, but he cut into the middle, like, kaboom. And I kind of felt a little bad after because it was the Olympic break, and he was going to the Olympics, obviously, and I planted him pretty good, and I didn't think might not be able to go to the Olympics. There was word, and I was like, ah, crap, you know, that kind of sucks because he's, you know, he's an Olympian and an all-star and a heck of a player. So, but yeah, I got him good. That was my best one, I think.
That's awesome.
I wonder if you asked him what he would say, who hit him the hardest.
Probably aren't because not too many people catch. That's the thing about the hit. I mean, that highlight reel is pretty short of the times Marian Hossa got caught. Rafi Torres is probably the biggest one, but that was a dirty hit.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that one. Oh God, he'd probably say that one. That one smoked him.
Yeah, but he probably disqualify that one for being, you know, something
because it was
a stretcher. Yeah, it was
Rafi.
worthy of 30 games. Anyway, go ahead, Greg.
Hey, Colby, moving on to the league here. I'm sure you've been keeping side eye on the Pittsburgh Penguins this year. What are your thoughts on their plight? What are your thoughts on what they look like now under Mike Sullivan, where all of a sudden they're back being an offensive juggernaut?
Yeah, I like it. I like the move they made. I thought they kind of played scared earlier in the year. I mean, they're getting wins. Don't get me wrong, their record was okay, and I think a lot of people were like, oh, hey, why'd they fire the coach? Their record is this. But I just think their play in general, you know, just with what they had, what they were built for, you know. Yeah, their D couldn't move the puck as great. I think Daly obviously helps with that also, along with the new coach. But I think the new coach just brings, you know, some structure and some accountability, and not just accountability within the structure and the way they play into his team, but to his big guys. I think you see Crosby doing much better now. He's got 5 goals in his last 5 games. He's heating up big time. He's playing on his toes. Like, he's involved. He looks good during games. Whereas before, I kind of felt like the whole team, except for Malkin, with the exception of Malkin, I think most of the guys look kind of like, you know, we're going to play defense here. And, you know, I can really see their game coming along. So it's exciting now. I don't know. I'm going to the game tonight against Chicago, so we'll see how they look against a good team like that. And obviously, I have a home and home with them coming up here. So some big tests in their schedule. And but I like the way they're playing. They got Letang's back from injury. Fleury's back, which is huge. He was probably the guy that won them most of their games early in the season. He was playing out of his mind for them, and So it's good to get their guys back healthy, too.
How much of it, I mean, this is under the new head coach, but, you know, in the previous head coach, Mike Johnson, it just seemed as if the defense weren't getting the puck to Sidney when he wanted it in his own zone. I mean, and you played with the guy. You watch the Pittsburgh Penguins. We all watch the Pittsburgh Penguins. But mm-hmm. I mean, you're on the ice with him. I mean, when he wants the puck, I mean, you get it to him, regardless of, well, you know, coach wants us to go D to D before we start to make that pass out of our own zone. Like, you just give him the puck, right?
Yeah, it did. It looked a little robotic to me. Like, they had their set plays, like, point A to point B to point C. And instead of Sid being open, like, okay, like, point B, like, see you later. We're passing it to 87. And, you know, I always think you can give it to Sid way more than you can. Like, watching him, I think he doesn't need much time or space. And if anything, he can get it right back to somebody else and then bust by a guy. That's what he's so good at, is, you know, inviting, like, contact and traffic and coming out of there. And whether he has a puck or he doesn't, he just needs a second to make a play, give it to him, get it back, and then he can beat a guy. And I think that's when he's effective, too. But, you know, they played like a robotic system, and I don't know, there wasn't much flow to their game, really, like in watching it. I can see now they've got a little bit more flow, a little bit more structure, a little bit, you know, and they're starting to really come on. They're getting some power play goals. They're getting some momentum built up with their play. And, you know, I think Sid's getting the puck more. I didn't like even the way Sid was playing that. You know, at times I talked about it on Hockey Central at noon. I went on there, and he seemed to throw the puck away a lot and wasn't hanging on to it in the offensive zone as much. And I can see now he's got that, you know, he's got that swagger back now. So maybe it was a little bit of confidence with how his season had started. But he's really got it cooking now. It's nice to see.
Yeah, for sure. And it's, you know, I understand why they did what they did with Johnston and trying to give him more structure and thinking that's why they didn't win the playoffs and the whole thing. But at the end of the day, man, you got some absolute showmen out there. You got to let them fly a little bit. And you're right. It seemed like, you know, structure led to frustration, led to a lack of results, and then led to him hitting the bricks after he got fired.
Yeah, absolutely. And I watch their guys play, and I played with these guys like Malkin and Crosby. And, you know, there's lots of questions of, oh, do these guys, you know, are they rubbing their backs, and is everything good, and they're worried about them. And I think Sullivan brings a, you know, he challenges them, and you can see it in their game, at least in Sid's. You can see he's rising to a challenge right now, you know, and I think they feed off of that. I think both those guys are competitive guys, and, you know, playing with them, that's one thing. I'd give it to Sid, he'd give it to me. We had guys that were always chirping each other, you know, like, let's go, you got better, what the heck are you doing, you know, wake up. Hmm. And it fires him up, and he comes out there, and you know, at times I just picture him playing his best hockey is when he's upset, you know, when he's mad, when he's going, and he's involved that way. So, you know, I think I can see just a difference in his play right now. It's nice to see. Like I said, he's got that swagger. Hey, boys.
Well, here's the thing about me and about how I feel about Crosby and what you're just talking about as well. It would seem to me that at this point in Sidney Crosby's career, most players in that dressing room, like, I'm not talking about Malkin, like, I'm not talking about, you know, the elite guys that have been around for a long time. But when you're in that dressing room as a kid, it must be terrifying.
Yeah.
There's Sidney Crosby. I don't want to talk to him. I don't want to look at him. Like, oh, my God, I'm just so intimidated here. Like, I would wonder, like, for superstars, how important is it to have someone in the room to just be able to go over to him and say, psh, your goal is in 10 games, man. You're sucking.
Yeah, it's great.
Just like, as a joke,
like,
right?
Buddy, it'd be nice for you to get one every once in a while, hey?
Right?
Derp him or something, you know, yeah. No big deal. That's what the boys do. That's the best part. That's the part I miss about the game the most. That stuff right there. That's the stuff in the room with the fellas. That's the greatest thing. And, you know, I think guys, I can relate to young guys having that feeling. I got called up into a room with, like, John LeClair and Mark Recchi and Daryl Sador and Lyle Odline and Mario Lemieux kicking around the room here and there. So it's, you know, I was intimidated. I grew up watching all those guys, and I can see coming to a room as a young guy or up-and-coming guy, and, you know, you got Malkin, Kessel, Crosby, Letang, Fleury. You know, it's something to look at, and you're like, holy smokes, what am I doing here?
But what you're talking about, though, man, it's like that's the weird sort of intangibles part of player personnel that I think gets some people uncomfortable that are really dedicated towards analytics and everything else. Like, sometimes a guy who ain't the best player on paper and doesn't necessarily have the goals and assists is the guy that you need in that room sometimes, right?
I think that does get overlooked. I've always said that. I think in the grind of a season, practices, days on the bus, riding the plane, in the hotel, team dinners, You know, the times when your team's not doing well, when you need a guy in the room that makes it better. You know, times when you're doing good, when it makes it even better. Or a guy that can crack a joke in a way that gets a message home but doesn't upset the whole group. You know, that goes unlooked. And, you know, people don't see that on a day-to-day basis, where when you're in a group and you feel it as a team, it's something that I think every team needs. I think it's important to the group every single day on the grind of the season.
That's Mark Bergevin. Like when Mark Bergevin played, ask anyone who ever played with him. He's that guy that made an entire season, you know, bearable. When it's game
awesome
60.
Mark Bergevin stories.
Right? Everyone does. Everyone's got great ones, you know, like wearing a snorkel and flippers on the treadmill after the game. Oh, you got to be ready, boys. And, like, just goofy stuff like that makes it bearable when it's game 65.
The latest guy for me was Matt Hendricks. Like, I covered the Capitals when Hendricks was in D.C., and he was just a weirdo that kind of cut through the tension. And then he goes to Edmonton, and I'm like, what other franchise in this league needs a weirdo that can cut through the tension other than Edmonton, right? It's like, it seemed like it's
a
perfect
fit. Yeah, he carved himself out a nice spot there.
Yeah, exactly. All right, now, Arm Dog, you have come down on the side of good and light. You are someone who sees this John Scott thing for being what it is. Tell the people, as someone who has hashtag played the game, why you think it's okay that John Scott is an all-star.
Because they put in the fan vote, and the fans voted him in. And he plays in the NHL. Big deal. I mean,
pretty simple.
You know, I just look at it like Zegmus Girgensons.
Yep.
Got voted in because all of Latvia voted him. He hit 30 points last year. When he got voted in, what did he have? Like probably 12 or 15, let's be like fair.
Yeah.
But big deal. No problem with that. But I guess John Scott crossed the line. I don't know. I think he's got a good personality. So if anything, when he has to talk, he'll be really ripping it up with that, I'd imagine. But, you want to put a fan vote in, you put it in and people voted for him. Let the people get what they want.
That's a really good point.
John Scott's an all-star.
It's a really good point that I don't think we've really talked about, Merrick. The fact that, you know, when the Girgensons thing happened last year, we were all celebrating it because how awesome is it that Latvia voted for the guy? But then when it's not Latvia, but a bunch of, you know, podcasters and internet message board people that are doing the same damn thing.
Well, dude,
now all of a sudden it's beyond the pale.
Well, now no one said, oh, those aren't real hockey fans that voted Zemgus Girgensons
right.
in.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, no. That was delightful and that was charming and that was fun. And hey, Girgensons going. And why does every Latvian name end with S? Hey, I just noticed that now. Wow, isn't that crazy? But because it's some people on the internet, all of a sudden, you know, it's, oh, we've opened the cave door to let these Mongols out to type the keys to get John Scott voted on the All-Star game. That's an awesome point, Colby. That really is.
And you know what? Another thing, too. You know, if you ask John Scott, I think deep down, if he really deserved it, I'm sure deep down he'd be like, you know what? Hey, I know what I am. I saw him in an interview the other day talk about, you know, he thought he was going to be done playing a few years ago, and he stretched his career, and he probably has this year left. He's going to go out with a bang. He's an All-Star. I thought it was awesome. So, you know what? You put a guy in that situation and people voted for him. This guy probably says, you know what, maybe I shouldn't be there, but he got voted in. He's going.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you do that, if the NHL wanted to solve it, then they wouldn't open it up for anyone to vote for anyone. And I guess Zegmus Girgensons is better.
Yeah, and I've been trying to say that it's not voting the nerd in the back of the class as homecoming king. Like, it's voting the class clown. As valedictorian, it's more like that than it is trying to bully or shame someone based on the limitations of his.
And he didn't petition
abilities.
For it. He didn't go out and go after it.
Like, he rejected
he was just it. Doing his thing. He was sitting out. He said he didn't want to go.
Well, here's his best line too. You're right, Cole. Because at the beginning of all of this, he kind of said, "Well, you know, I don't want this, and I don't belong there, and I'm not an all-star. I haven't had the best season." And then he paused and said, but you never know. I could really heat things up, you know, before the. Come on.
You could have a good stretch.
You know what? I could get on a roll here. Who knows?
Yeah. All right. Exactly. Exactly. And that was the bottom line for me all the time throughout this whole thing. Like I said yesterday, the fact that we were voting for the dude who wore a t-shirt with his face on it after scoring the only goal he scored that season, whatever it is, like, that's a guy who's going to at least be able to understand the complexities of this fan vote. So I hope everything works
out.
The only
way I could justify it is the fans voted. If he's an all-star, no. If he is, yeah. I don't know. The fans voted. Actually, I do know. He's not an all-star, but the fans voted, so now he is. That's it. He's not an all-star, but the fans voted. He's an all-star. So,
he's an all-star.
That's it. Yeah, that's right. So now he's a captain.
Captain John Scott. Doesn't that sound regal? That sounds like something out of Pocahontas, Captain John
Scott.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable. Exactly. I came up with a move for him on the shootout for the skills competition. I think I
punch
told
the
you
puck.
About it.
Yeah. I mentioned this on the podcast that he has to figure out a way to punch the puck in the net. What's your move though?
Puck punch.
Puck punch.
I think I just think a straight right power cross.
With the puck?
Just, yeah. Shed the mitts, foil on.
Yeah.
Perfect.
That's what I'm saying. I think it needs to be like Dancing with the Stars when they have someone who absolutely can't dance on that show. And then they teach them like one dance move and everybody's like, my God, look how what an amazing dancer this guy is. Like if we could teach him the datsuk, just for one night.
Oh dear God.
Oh man.
I don't know if we have that much time.
He might break an ankle. You understand that, Greg?
You see that competition, like Ovi puts on sunglasses and like a cape, and he came in, he flipped it in the air, and he batted at it and missed it. Everyone's like, oh no, like John could do that.
John could miss it.
John might miss. He might hit it.
John can do that.
I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Right.
I don't know.
Or conversely, pick up Johnny Gaudreau and throw him like a javelin at the puck. You could do that as well.
Yeah,
it's one of those things.
Other
as well.
Guys.
Like,
I forgot about that.
Like, right. Army, honestly, you don't want to see, you don't want to see, Johnny Gaudreau score a goal and have John Scott put him on his shoulders at this thing. Like,
yeah.
Come on, dude.
And pretend Johnny Gaudreau is Stanley Cup and hoist him. I don't know.
And people,
see what happens.
And
but the one thing I like about him is he's a good dude. You hear everything about guys like him on his team, the quality of guy he is. You never hear anything bad about him as a teammate, probably why he's still kicking around. And you know what? You see him on his interviews. He says everything's coming in a positive way. You know, he's feeling good about it. He's taking it in stride, and good for him. It's not his
fault. That's awesome.
He got voted by the fans.
I'm with
that's
you.
That's awesome.
So it's your fault, Merrick.
Thank you, Colby. That'll be all with you. You go about the rest of your day. Thank you, Colby.
You
all right, thanks, Colby.
Strong, ladies and gentlemen, Arm
thanks,
Dog
pal.
Himself.
At Arm
proud,
Dog.
Proud former member of the Atlanta Thrashers, as we showed. I tweeted out that video, by the way, the Hossa hit.
Oh, man, it's spectacular.
It really is.
Like, he's right. I mean, there's a lot of the hits that people focus on, and normally it's the ones... And I didn't know that it was a Dennis Bonvie rip, but the ones where the guys are coming around the net and you just drop down from your point position and smoke them. And a lot of guys got starched that way. But the one Hossa, when he cuts in the middle.
Yep.
And Armstrong drops him. Ooh, that's hang on. Okay, someone just tweeted it to me. I should retweet that sucker. I'll retweet that right now. There you go. Boom.
I've often thought, I forgot to bring this up with Colby before, but I often thought that the impetus for that hit was to try to prove that the Thrashers won the Hossa trade, obviously.
That's right. He was in the deal. Oh, we should ask him. We should have asked him about his trade. Because that was a weird trade deadline, too, because.
Five players in the deal. Can you remember all five names? Going back which way?
Oh, my God. Okay. Pascal Dupuis. Marian Hossa. Going back the other way was Angelo Esposito. I swear I'm not doing this on the internet. Angelo Esposito, Colby Armstrong.
This is a tough one. I wouldn't have remembered this one, to be honest with you. Oh,
well, is it Alexander?
Hold on. It's a forward, I'll tell you that.
Was he on the roster or was he playing in the Quebec League? Alexander Bure.
He was on the roster. No, he was on the roster.
Was it Alexander Bure?
Was
it Bure?
Christensen.
No, because he wasn't on the roster. Eric Christensen.
It was Eric Christensen.
Right. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, yeah. But wasn't Bure one of the picks that ended up going the other way? Like Atlanta took Alexander Bure with one of the 11th overall, never played?
Yeah, because there was a one in the trade, too. I saw that might have been the one that they got in that deal.
That was a weird day because, we should have Army back closer to the trade deadline to go through his day. Because that day, Atlanta was playing in Montreal the night before, and the whole team left. The whole team had left, but Don Waddell stayed back in Montreal, and I'm pretty sure it was just Don Waddell and Marian Hossa in a hotel room in Montreal where Donnie Waddell was trying to get the deal done. Like, the rest of the team had left town. Hossa stayed behind because he was going from Montreal to wherever he ended up getting traded.
Right, right.
That was an interesting draft. But you wonder, too, what the other players are thinking. Because everyone had Hossa going to Pittsburgh that day, too. That was kind of – but I would imagine all the players on the Pittsburgh Penguins that day, even at morning skate, would be like, oh, you're just waiting to get called off the ice as you're skating. I wonder what
Thrasher's
story was.
So Hossa made $6 million that season. The Thrashers were worried he was just going to walk, and that would have been the second time that happened. Because that was after Heatley walked, so they had to deal him. They couldn't allow this to happen for a second time. Don Waddell said at the time, I had six pretty damn good options. If the deadline would have been 2 hours later at 5 o'clock, I don't know what I could have done by that time. So he goes and makes the super mega deal with the Penguins for a rent-a-player. That's the other thing. Man, the balls on Chiro. The rent-a-player deal for Marian Hossa, who then goes for, and walks away to the Red Wings the following season.
And who ended up being the more influential player for the Pittsburgh Penguins, though? Marian Hossa or Pascal Dupuis? Going away.
By far.
But remember, I remember what everybody was saying. Oh, they got Marian Hossa. That's so fantastic. And they got this other guy to kill penalties. Who wasn't, you know, supposed to last for a long time.
The throw-in.
Yeah. Throw in Pascal Dupuis. I don't know. Take him.
Christensen had 9 goals and 11 assists in 49 games. Crosby's road roommate and one of the Penguins' most popular players, this was about Armstrong, has 9 goals and 15 assists in 54 games. Yeah, that was the other thing too. Like, I remember at the time the notion that Colby was in the deal was like, well, what about Sid? I mean, how could you do that to Sid?
That was Crosby's best friend. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Colby told me once that he thought, let me get Colby to tell the story. I think he told me once that he thought he was a little bit insulated from the trade because he was so close with Sid. That in some ways he almost thought that was his trade protection. That was like his no trade clause.
Right.
Being buddies with Sid. I remember all that like army stuff in Pittsburgh.
Yes. Otherwise known as the Bozak Amendment, I believe is the,
Well, here's something. Speaking of the Pittsburgh Penguins, I had a really interesting conversation with someone 2 weeks ago. Glad we have the podcast back on regularly here. I can talk about things like this. Had a conversation about Jim Rutherford and the Pittsburgh Penguins, right? Who put forward the position to me that Jim Rutherford, and sure he does need to shoulder some of the blame for what has happened to the Pittsburgh Penguins, but this person and who is in a strong position to know this says that in some ways Jim Rutherford is the fall guy for decisions that are being made much above his head, namely the mandate from the higher office than Jim Rutherford is, get wingers for Crosby. That is the mandate. No matter what it takes, you do this. This is your job. And this person said to me, consider this, Jeff. Why would Willie Desjardins turn down the Pittsburgh Penguins for Vancouver and Bill Peters turn down the Pittsburgh Penguins for Carolina? Why?
That's true.
If you know this is the mandate, right?
Yeah. Part of that is also
part of the tip off is like, well, who's really in charge here? Like, what is? I mean, every GM has marching orders. Listen, nothing with so much money on the line and so much riding on all of this. The old days where ownership or team president aren't involved are long gone. And we've said it before: completely. The art of the general manager is a dying thing. But still,
yes.
Think yourself: why would Desjardins turn it down for Vancouver? Why would Peters turn it down for Carolina?
You're right, because and this has been a drum that Rob Rossi's been banging for a long time. Like you want to point fingers all over the organization, point them as high as you can, man. It's Morehouse, it's Mario, it's the way that this team has been run, and a certain amount of meddling in that process. And I don't think that takes necessarily wrong. Tonight the Penguins are playing Chicago. They're hosting the Blackhawks. It is of course rivalry night on NBC. Stoking the flames of that rivalry.
Mohit at Don MKB sent in this tweet. Have you checked your Wikipedia page lately, Greg Wyshynski? Part of your professional description? He currently makes a living by insulting fellow hockey podcasters that played the game. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I don't think I ever mentioned that I have a Wikipedia page now. That's a big accomplishment.
Congratulations. That's awesome.
I know. I have an amazing agent.
I was talking to my wife yesterday, as a matter of fact, because there's a story about a person in Canada who was trying to find their birth mom, and he put something on Facebook, and it got embraced, and people sent it out all over the place, and he finally connected. And I've always wanted to try to find my biological father, but I've never been able to even begin to find out where. And my wife last night was like, well, why don't you just like put out a couple of tweets or put on your wiki page or put it on Facebook? I'm like, well, first of all, I don't know how to update a wiki page. And it would just seem so, like, I don't know, goofy putting it up on Twitter. So I don't even know how to go about it. But anyway, your thoughts on rivalry night coming up.
Well, I've just got sidetracked. What if it ends up being Doug McClain? Will you be okay with that if that was your dad?
Are you kidding? I would love that. He's one of the funniest guys I know. If Mac were my dad, I would torture him endlessly, and that would make Clark, my half brother, his son,
who's
an agent right now.
There you go.
Working with Justin Duberman's company out of Chicago. So yeah, that could be kind of cool. And second of all,
for your birthday, you get all kinds of old Blue Jacket swag for your birthday every year. It'd be really fun.
Whatever, man. I don't care. Send me a bunch of dry fits for the gym. I'm cool with that. I don't care. Whatever. All I know is you owe me like a number of years of birthday presents. And
that's right.
Doug McClain has the money to pay for it. Like, Doug's got Burt Reynolds money, dude. Like, trust me. I would be only too happy if Doug was my dad. That'd be the best thing ever. Get to hang out with Doug. I'm telling you, that guy tells some of the funniest stories. I never really knew Doug, obviously, until I worked with him. Anyone that has ever worked with him or had a – I know you and him had a certain difference once upon
a
time.
Oh, I'm fine. We're
fine after
now.
A certain trade deadline. You guys are cool
as
now.
As this podcast is established, I've had heat with roughly three-quarters of the industry. Doug and I are fine now.
Okay. Fair. Okay. Well, that's good, because if it turns out that Doug was my dad, I'd be happy as hell. And so would my accountant. Because that guy, oh, man.
Rivalry night between the Blackhawks.
All he has to do is buy tin cans to bury the money in his backyard. God bless him.
There you go.
Okay,
Blackhawks and Penguins, Trevor Daley versus Rob Scuderi. Obviously, the matchup we're all waiting for, hence the rivalry, I suppose, in rivalry night. I will be attending the Dallas Stars at the New York Rangers. Very interested to see if the Stars can kind of get this going again after a bit of a stumble here on the East Coast.
Yeah. Slumping Stars. What is going on with the Dallas Stars? It is
5-3-2.
It is a challenge of leadership now for the first time this season. What can they do? The once mighty. You know what? I think it's moments like this where, yeah, you're Jim Nill, and you say to yourself, yeah, you know you're not going to sail through the entire season, and you know your team has some holes, and maybe more importantly for Lindy Ruff. It's hard to get the attention of a team when they're just starching other squads. It's hard to say, now guys, like, here's how we need to play. Now guys, here's what you don't do in that situation. It's tough to get that message along when you're 8-1-1 in your last 10.
Right.
But when you have a few games that you lose, all of a sudden the coach says, yes, here's my chance finally to get to these guys.
Open hearts and open minds at that point. You're right. That's a very good point. And by the way, don't look now. I don't know if you, I just discovered last night, watching that Colorado LA game, that there is a Western Conference. A lot of fans were very excited to see me watching the Western Conference. In fairness, I didn't know the NHL had expanded. But there's a team in Anaheim.
1967.
There's a team in Anaheim. Really, an offensive juggernaut with 73 goals in the season in 38 games.
No.
But they're a playoff team right now. And they have not been a playoff team maybe since the start of the season, but by virtue of games in hand, they are third place in the Pacific right now, a scant 3 points in back of the Arizona Coyotes. So in the topsy-turvy world that is the Pacific, the Ducks have finally climbed out of the basement and they're in third place, although they're only 2 points up on the team in the basement, the Edmonton Oilers.
And what's their goal differential? Oh yeah, minus 17.
Minus 17.
And what's
in honor of Brian Kesler?
What's Arizona's goal differential? Oh yeah, minus 14. You know who you feel bad for in all of this?
Because everybody.
Well, yeah, everybody too. But in some ways, it's no treat being the Los Angeles Kings right now. Sure, they dropped one to Colorado last night, but it's no treat to be the Los Angeles Kings right now come playoff time. Why? Well, all year long we've been saying, okay, it's the LA Kings and then everybody else, and they're going to run away with the Pacific, and they are. But what's their reward? What is their reward? They will play a really good central team in the first round, while Arizona and Anaheim, or whomever is 2-3 in that division, end up fighting it out.
Right. Their reward would be to
what's the
play,
reward here?
Pekka Rinne for 7 games.
Yeah, that's exactly. Here you go, Daryl Sutter. Here's your treat for winning the Pacific. Meanwhile, Arizona and Anaheim, yeah, can go duke it out. Like, how's this a reward for LA for winning the division? I get it, it's a freak year, and I get that the Central is the Valley of Death. But still, it's not much of a reward.
You got all jewels from Pulp Fiction there.
Little bit, yeah. I got a little bit there, yeah.
And you know, my name is the Coyotes.
All right. Hey, so Coyotes, send us John Scott, by the way. Send John Scott here.
You got
any in a loving environment where he'll be appreciated.
You got anything else here on ye olde podcast today before we say farewell? Anything new on Jonathan Drouin punts, by the way, in front of the media today, not talking about it. He says it's an issue between my agent and the team. Of course, the agent said, I'm requesting a trade on behalf of Jonathan Drouin. So you'd figure he'd have something to say about it, but no. Anything on that?
I don't blame him for saying no. I mean, I'm sure he's just happy to have, you know, Alan Walsh do this very publicly. I think this is going to be, you know, this is, again, a test of the spine for Steve Yzerman. Because we talked about with Eric Erlandson yesterday or Sunday. If you're Steve Yzerman, I mean, you got to the Stanley Cup final without Jonathan Drouin. It's not as if he is a real key cog to this machine right now. It's one thing to grow a pair when you're dealing with Steven Stamkos. It's another and a lot easier when you're dealing with someone who's on his entry level.
Oh, for
sure. So I wonder how much in all of this Steve Yzerman says, you know what? I've had it. It's been rough. Sure, we went to the Stanley Cup final. But whether it is the Martin St. Louis nonsense, now it's the Steven Stamkos nonsense, and now I got to put up with something from you? Uh-uh. Like, there are just some people that you can be strong against and towards. And couldn't do it against St. Louis. Couldn't do it, or can't do it so far against Steven Stamkos, but can do it with Jonathan Drouin. That's why I don't know how good an idea this was to go public with this information.
Yeah.
If you're the agent. Like... And they got you. They got you. The CBA got you. Like,
yeah.
you can't. You have no leverage here.
You're trying to create leverage where there is none. You're completely
right. There's none.
Yeah, and that's why I think ultimately what he ends up doing is he plays for the Lightning organization through the season. You see where the chips fall with Stamkos, and then if you lose a top six forward, then you can leverage either you're going to find it in Drouin. Or you can leverage Drouin into getting someone else. There's absolutely no reason to move him now. None.
Yeah, none. No, I don't see where the pressure is. Like, you want to move? Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen. But it does, again, it does bring up the question. I mean, there have been a couple this year. Remember when Patrick Marleau demanded to be traded? We don't talk about that anymore. Travis Hamonic? That was a big story for a while. We don't talk about that anymore.
Well,
we sort of mentioned it in passing.
Fairness, I think the Boychuk injury kind of necessitated
that yeah. You're right. Yeah, that caved that in. And now there's Jonathan Drouin, and it wouldn't surprise me as much as everyone, you know, expects a trade when someone demands to be traded. Plenty of players have demanded to be traded, and then things have worked out.
Yeah. I'll say this finally for potential moves and acquisitions and everything. Leave it to Elliot Friedman to lay out what will probably be the thing that happens with Dustin Byfuglien in his latest column.
So,
of all the places where Dustin Byfuglien could end up, and I think we all agree that he's going to be moved, not only because Winnipeg's not a playoff team, but because he's probably too rich for their blood at this point. Mm-hmm. Of all the places he could go, how is your first place team in the Atlantic Division not the most logical place?
Florida Panthers?
God, right?
What do they pay, though?
But no, for a rental.
That's what I'm saying. What do they pay, though? Like, what's it gonna what do they have to give up to get him?
Well, I don't know, because it depends on what Winnipeg's looking for. Because if it's for futures, I mean, they're kind of transitioning right now, aren't they?
Winnipeg has futures. Like, they have
What would they want then?
I don't know. I have to go. I can't just give you a flippant answer because I don't have. Oh, let me call up the lineup here right in front of me. Hang on. Do, 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 do. I go to hockey. I go down to my team page.
But, I mean, if there's one thing we know about Dale Tallon, is Dale Tallon likes to acquire the players that he liked to acquire the first time.
Every GM does that. Uh-huh. Well, I shouldn't say every GM. A lot of GMs do that. Okay, so down the middle, they look nice. Young wingers, they're okay. I would say you'd want a defenseman coming back.
All right, so which defenseman do you want?
That ain't going to happen. They're not going to let go of a D-man there.
Ain't going to be Kulikov. No.
Is it? No. Oh. Are they at the place now?
Oh, I see what you're trying to say. Good Branson?
I don't know, he's played
good Branson and a pick for Buffalo?
I don't know, good Branson's kind of, I mean, once they got good Branson away from Willie Mitchell, everything was really nice. They're both right-hand shots.
I like that idea. And then you trade for Buffalo, and then he flies down, and the sunshine hits his face, and he says, my God, I could never think about being anywhere but here. Takes a huge hometown discount on a short-term contract, and he's a Panther for the next 4 years.
But here's the problem, though.
The end.
Here's the problem. You have an expiring contract, so you get rid of good Branson, and then you have an expiring contract on both Buffalo and Brian Campbell. So you have two big expiring contracts. Boom, boom, and you've lost good Branson. So three defensemen. See you later.
How old's Buffalo?
30, blah, 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 blah. He is 30, he's almost 31. And this is his last home run.
You let Campbell walk, you use that salary slot for Buffalo. Campbell's going to be 37.
No, I know.
Oh, Dale, come on. You probably have a spot for an assistant GM after Santos left, so one of us can fill that slot for you. We just did it. We just gave you Buffalo. Courtesy of Elliot Friedman. Trader Elliot.
Maybe because, I don't know, they got a lot of...
You know what's going to happen.
They're kind of stacked. Like, when you look at who they've drafted as well, I mean, Kyle Connor, Jack Raslovic, I mean, Ehlers is already playing with the team. Josh Morrissey, although Drury's out on Josh Morrissey, Eric Comrie, and that, like, they look all right.
I will say, they're an interesting team, those Panthers. I don't know if they're going to necessarily make the finish line, but they're an interesting team. And boy, did Lambert kick the Hornets yesterday. Jesus.
I missed a piece. What was it? I missed him, and I love his stuff too, so I normally go out of my way to read Lambert.
The Panthers are a fraud for now because their underlying numbers indicate that they can't sustain this. He said they're going to be the next Leafs or Avalanche or Flames in the long, strange history of teams that look great and then fall apart. Their stats guy, who I actually met at our meetup in Fort Lauderdale, kind of indicated, well, you know, there's a lot of things that point to that, but one of the basic differences between us and those teams, he said, is shot suppression. He said the Panthers are quite good at shot suppression, while those other teams were definitely relying on the kindness of their above average goaltending to weather these storms. So I think that he thinks the Panthers are a little bit more solid than Lambert did in his assessment.
Brian McDonald is who you're talking about, who's the director of hockey analytics for the Florida Panthers.
Maybe it was him. Maybe it was somebody else. I forget who it was.
Okay.
I'm going to be assigning it to somebody that it shouldn't be assigned to you, but what am I going to, you know, what am I supposed to do? Look at names.
Okay. Hello, my name is Brian McDonald, Director of Hockey Analytics. Yeah. Welcome to the MBSW party. I'm still waiting for Luongo's body to fall apart, to be honest with you. We talked about this last time. Like, goalies that play that way shouldn't play this way this long.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
That to me is the big one. Like, that's a hard go style Panthers. On the knees and grind, man.
Yeah, go Panthers. Good job on Elliot predicting the Buffalo trade that probably will happen to Florida. Riegler points out that I misspoke before. Heatley didn't leave. Heatley was traded for Hossa.
Hossa.
But I think that's sort of a byproduct it was, of saying he wasn't going to come back, if memory serves.
Yeah, and didn't that happen after Hossa took the Ottawa Senators to arbitration? And then he took him to arbitration. I think he won his arb. He got on a plane to go to Slovakia, and Muckler was so furious that even before Hossa landed, he was a thrasher. He ended up in Atlanta even before the plane landed. So how did arbitration go? Great. It's awesome. Hang on. What is this newspaper? What does this newspaper say? What? I'm in Atlanta now?
Oh, boy. All right. Listen, we've gone on way too long.
Nah, keep talking. One day we got to do like a
Colby.
How long are we allowed to have on iTunes? Is there a max length you can have?
I've listened to podcasts that have gone on for 2.5 hours on iTunes, so I don't know what the max would be. I mean, I think there's a maximum to the amount of time that they'd let us have Sam.
<For example>. That's probably true. Until the fans started saying, okay, give us our boy back here. We have other more important podcasts and radio things to do than your goofy little...
Somebody walks in and they're like, Sam, we need you for hockey talk on 590. And Sam's like, they're an hour and 45 minutes into it and they haven't done the intro yet.
Don't you understand? They're talking about the Hossa Heatley deal. It's really important stuff.
You know who I feel bad for? But all of the people that love the podcast and complain that we never talk about their favorite teams, and we do roughly a half hour on the Atlanta Thrashers today.
And you know what's shitty about that is I wanted to do a big thing on the Carolina Hurricanes defense, because Sport Logic, Christopher Boucher, sent me some stuff the other day. Some talking about underlying numbers with Ryan Lambert. Some of the underlying numbers on the Carolina Hurricanes defense. It is freaking amazing how good this collection of defensemen have been this year.
I'm just like, really pissed off that it never occurred to me to name one of any of Lambert's columns underlying numbers with Ryan Lambert. It's a hell of a name.
Maybe it's a name now. Anyways, who's in charge of the names of your who's in charge of the names of the columns?
It falls to me.
Can you name all of your columns never played the game?
I was going to name my next book that until you told me Cosell already stole it.
Oh, it's such a good book, too.
And by stole it, I mean I assume he traveled into the future and knew I was going to write another book called that and said,
yeah,
that
exactly.
Sounds like a perfect one name from my book. And then traveled back in time and wrote it.
Yeah, that's Scourge. Howard Cosell stole it. But why not, man? Hey, listen, man. Your hero, Phil Esposito's Thunder and Lightning, that title is ripped off from John Ferguson Sr. That was the name of his autobiography, too. So there you go. Greatness borrows, genius steals. Boom. Done. Do it. I never played the game. Still your name. Take
I named my book that because it was a very dark and stormy night when I put pen to paper to write my magnum opus. Also, I was wearing my lightning blazer and ripped a crazy big fart. And I said, thunder and lightning, there you go, Bill. So I called up Ken Hodge.
Oh, jeez, there we go. Okay, now you do. Not only are we not talking about NHL teams, but now you're doing Espo bits. And we do that live, damn it.
It turned up the volume really loud. All right, we'll see
that's
you guys
way of saying, get out of here.
On Thursday. Alozo, me tomorrow. Merrick back Thursday. And then we'll go from there. Thanks to Sam. Thanks to Colby. Thanks to Sneakers for squeaking. And
yeah, attaboy, Sneaks.
All that good stuff. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.